most of you have been in here, but for those of you who haven't, the topic is marriage, and kind of came about as a result of just meeting with people, an out-of-state counseling group that I work with, that are 50 and beyond, and been married 30, 35, 40 years, 50, 55 years in one case, 56 years, one come up here recently, that their marriages aren't good, but they want to finish well. And so I was like, what's going on here? And so we talked about those foxes, Song of Solomon 2:15, catch all the foxes, those little foxes, before they ruin the vineyard of love, for the grapevines are blossoming. So we talked about foxes that get into our marriage, that are weeds in a garden that cause it to not flourish and to be less fruitful than it can be. So really just want to take marriages that perhaps are floundering and take them to a place of flourishing. Kind of a play on words, or maybe your marriage is going great. Hope this will be beneficial to you. Maybe it needs some tune-ups. Maybe you need to catch some foxes or pull some weeds. So that's really the purpose of this. And kind of along these lines, this last week I was reading about the title of an article I was reading was called Gray Divorce is Rising. So gray meaning those people with gray hair. Their divorce is rising. And they talked about how it's typically empty nest syndrome when the children leave the home. Existing marital dissatisfaction kind of gets exposed. The goal of raising your children's over, and now, you know, why are you still together? But that didn't happen overnight. There was cracks in that foundation way before the children left the home. Another reason they gave was greater economic freedom allows easier separation. I'm sure that's true, but that's kind of a worldly view. That's really a lack of an underground. What's the roots down here? And it said this, that the most striking demographic shift is the growing divorce rate among those 50 and older. The 50s and 60s has become a peak range for a significant portion of splits. In 1990, 8.7% of all divorces in the United States occurred among adults 50 and older. By 2019, the percentage had grown to 36%. So we go from 8.7 in 1990, and 29 years later, it's 36%. And this article commented, partners are more reluctant to settle for the empty shell marriages, like the marriage is just a shell. So 1 in 10 people currently getting divorced in the United States are 65 or older. So 10% are 65 or older. Interestingly, and this doesn't surprise me, because I think I told you guys that in the couples that I talk to, it's the man who wants to work on the marriage at that point. I think it was early on, it was probably the woman. But the woman is less committed to the marriage at these later ages. And this article said women initiate divorce more often than men. On average, 70% of divorces are initiated by women. And among college-educated women, that number jumps to 90%. So pretty shocking facts about that. So women are initiating divorce more, and more gray divorces on the rise. So certainly don't want that to happen to my own marriage or to yours as well. So that's the purpose of this class, and it's really not just to prevent you from getting divorced, it's to actually cause you and help you have a marriage that is one that is joyful and one that is one you want to be around. Think ahead to, and some of us are there, but think ahead to your retirement and to your latter 15 or 20 years. You want to be in a situation where you enjoy being with your mate, not in an area of conflict. You want to sow today so you can reap those golden years, they call them. So it's more than just preventing divorce. It's causing, I hope this will cause us to really rise up and do the things that it takes to have a marriage that is joyful and happy and harmony. There's harmony and there's peace. So looking at our lesson, we've been through 5 or 6 previous foxes or weeds, and wanted to look at pride and self-righteousness. It's two in one, but I think they go together. Pride produces self-righteousness, so I kind of lump them together. I don't have this on your handout, but just for the sake of definitions, pride comes from a fancy Greek word, but it means over or above plus shine. So you're above something and you're shining over it. It's a head held high above others, literally. It's a feeling of personal superiority in regards to others with haughtiness. Pride is a high opinion of one's self. It's to show oneself above, like the root word means, above shine, or it's also a thing of the heart. Pride comes from the heart. Pride does not recognize its own sin. It's characterized pride that cannot receive help because it does not know that it needs help and therefore cannot ask. It loves not God but itself. That's what pride does. Contrast, humility is a combination of two words meaning to lie lowly and to think lowly. Means to think or judge with lowliness, unassuming in the estimation of one's ability, without arrogance. So just to contrast pride and humility, we'll be getting into that a little bit deeper. Paul in Acts 20:19, he said he served the Lord with all humility. And true humility is not putting ourselves down, but lifting others up. Self-righteousness, so pride, humility, self-righteousness. Self-righteousness, it's the idea that one is just and morally superior through one's own efforts, relying on your personal goodness or your works for salvation, disregarding dependence on Christ, disregarding God's grace. Self-righteousness leads to pride and a harsh judgment of others. So I wanted to give those to you just to kind of give a little bit idea of what we're talking about here. So I've listed some scriptures here on pride and then some on self-righteousness that you have printed out there. The first one is, where there is pride, where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. And I gave that in both the NIV and the NLT. The NLT says, pride leads to conflict. Those who take advice are wise. So think about wherever you see strife in any relationship or you see conflict. Since we're talking about marriage, let's look at it in marriage. Where there's strife, there's pride. They're inseparable. And so it's like when you are counseling someone or you're counseling yourself, think about that. There's strife or conflict. Somebody's got some pride. Maybe one or both. And what's neat about this proverb is the second part of it says, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. So Proverbs are contrast here. Obviously, the one who is prideful doesn't take advice or doesn't take counsel. So I think that's really, really neat that those are paired like that. Prideful people don't take counsel or advice, and pride is a relationship killer. So I think this class is good not just for our marriages, but for our relationships in general. Pride will kill good relationships. So some other scriptures here on pride. When pride comes, disgrace follows, but with humility comes wisdom. It's really impossible to be a proud person and have wisdom. You have to have humility to have wisdom. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There's more hope for a fool than for him. person's pride will humble him, but a humble spirit will gain honor. You want to be honored. Pride's not the way to go. It's always humility. Humility precedes honor. And you all would be familiar with the Luke account of the Pharisee and the hated tax collector, but the Pharisee stood and prayed about himself like this: God, I thank you that I'm not like other people, extortionists, unrighteous people, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of everything I get. This is a prideful, self-righteous. This is a prime example of a self-righteous man. I don't have it down, but 1 Corinthians 4:7, to anyone who thinks self-righteously or in a prideful way, Paul asks this question: what do you have that God hasn't given you? What do you have that God hasn't given you? And if everything you have is from God, why boast as though it were not? As though it were not a gift from him. Good questions from the Apostle Paul. So we'll talk a little bit about how you might know that you have some pride in your relationship. I'm pulling on some material from What Did You Expect by Paul Tripp, and it's now called Marriage by Paul Tripp. Here's the old copy. I don't know if any of you got this or not. This would be a great book. If you have a marriage that has quite a bit of conflict and a lot of trouble, actually this would be a good book for that. There's some other marriage books that might be good for you if you just need a tune-up, or you have a good marriage and you want to make it better. But I think this one's one, if you've got quite a few issues, that would be a good one. So Paul Tripp wrote this: do you welcome those moments when your husband or wife approaches you with a criticism or concern about something you did or said? Notice, do you welcome those moments? And do you make it easy for your spouse for those moments? I know there's early on in our marriage that was not something I made it easy for Maria to do. So at one point I said, here's some time, do that. Are you glad that God has placed you next to someone who helps you see yourself with greater accuracy? Do you embrace and act on the thought that you could be a better husband or a better wife? When you are approached with a criticism or concern, do you ever redirect the conversation, working to convince the other that you're not the only sinner in the room? Have you actually invited your spouse to confront you in places where he or she thinks it is needed? Do you ever blame your words or behavior on your spouse? When you feel a twinge of guilt, do you work to relieve your guilt by self-atoning arguments for the rightness of what you said or did? How active is your inner lawyer internally arguing in your defense, even as the other person is speaking? Have you tended to think that all the weeds in your marriage were brought in by your spouse? That's from Paul Tripp. I wanted to read a little bit of what Paul Tripp said about his own experience, and I'm glad he was humble enough to put this in his book. He said, I was there, self-righteous, but I did not know it. I was an angry man, but I simply did not see myself with anything approaching accuracy. In fact, I was quite hurt when Luella, that's his wife, would characterize me as angry and was quite convinced that she was a discontented wife. Once, and this is humbling to admit, I actually said to her, 95% of the women in our church would love to be married to a man like me. Any of you guys ever said that? Oh, guys, have you, men?
Do you think they're going to say that now?
They're humble. They're looking at themselves with accuracy. Yeah, 95% of the women in our church would love to be married to a man like me. Can you believe it? I was convinced my own righteousness and therefore convinced my innocence. Oh, and by the way, Luella very sweetly informed me that she was in the 5%. Good for Luella. Has self-righteousness kept you from weeding your marriage? Have you failed to keep the soil of your marriage clean so that good things may grow because you don't think you have any weeds? What thoughts, desires, motives, goals, choices, words, or actions need to be uprooted if your marriage is ever going to experience what God's grace makes possible to experience? Also from What Did You Expect? He makes another paragraph here that I just had to insert because I think it's so true. It's only grace that protects us from self-righteousness. Because we all suffer from some degree of personal spiritual blindness, that is, we do not see ourselves with accuracy. And because we tend to see the weaknesses and failures of our spouse with greater accuracy, isn't that amazing? We really see them very well. We begin to think of ourselves as more righteous than our husband or wife. When we do this, and to some degree we all do, it makes it hard to think we are part of the problem in our marriage. It makes it difficult to embrace a loving criticism and correction of the other person. It's not only blindness that prevents us from change, but assessment of personal righteousness as well. If we are convinced that we are righteous, we desire neither change nor the help that can make it happen. Frankly, I think probably every one of us here, if we would admit this, at some point thinks that we're a better spouse than our spouse. I bet that's true. I bet you down deep, each one of us would probably think that. That's dangerous place to be. And it gets more dangerous if you're convinced at some point that you're more godly, more spiritual, more wise, more righteous. You can begin to really look down on your spouse and begin to resent them for their lack of being as godly as you are. You study your Bible more, you read it more, you know more scripture, you know more truth. You can look down upon them. That's a dangerous place to be. It might be true in one sense, but if you have that attitude, that's going to not be good in your relationship. So I put in the verse here, 1 John 1:8, if we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves. So a self-righteous person is a very deceived person. They say they have no sin. They're deceived. The truth is not in them. However godly you may be, however spiritual you may be, who do you give the credit for that? 1 Corinthians 15:10, Paul says, I am what I am by the grace of God. This is a man who didn't take credit for being the great apostle Paul, who went into the third heaven and saw visions and couldn't even write them down. They were so great. Who was given a thorn in the flesh so that he would learn not to exalt himself above what he should be, asked for it to be removed, kept him humble. But he made this statement, I am what I am by the grace of God. So we had the verses earlier on pride. I want to always, in weeding out the weeds of our marriage or the foxes in our marriage, what are put on verses that help us to weed those out? So for pride, you would all would be pretty familiar with most of these, but put on verses would include God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. That word oppose there is a really strong term. It's like God is militarily aligned against you if you are a proud person filled with pride. He will oppose you. He will get in the way of your plans and your goals. He will oppose you, but he gives grace to the humble. So James later says, humble yourselves before the Lord, then he will exalt you. Way up is down first, humble, going down. being a biblical counseling class, it's about put off and put on. And so clothe yourself means to put on. So we're literally putting on clothes. What clothes are we putting on? Having humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that at the proper time he may exalt you. True humility and fear of the Lord lead to riches, honor, and long life. Colossians 3:12, after a long list of put-offs, says, put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Now Romans 12:3, for by the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. I want to take just a little deeper look at that verse. It says, I say to everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. I think the opposite of that can be pride too. If you think too little of yourself, and are always putting yourself down and diminishing the gifts that God has given you, diminishing the talents that he's given you, that's pride as well. It's kind of a false humility. So whenever I look at that verse, I think of that. We aren't to think more highly of ourselves, but we should not think less of ourselves than what the gifts that God has given us. Hope that makes sense. I think that's easy to do in Christian circles, like, well, we need to debase ourselves and put ourselves down, and we can do that in a way that's really not honoring to God. Paul says in Ephesians 4:1-2, I therefore, prisoner of the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love. There's the word humility again. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Romans 12:16. The fear of the Lord is instruction and wisdom, and humility comes before honor. So the destructive weeds and foxes of pride and self-righteousness, they're present in all of us personally. They're impacting our marriages. So I hope this gives you some put-on, some tools. The handout that I gave out today, which we're not going to go over, but I urge you to do that at home. That is a lesson on ways to determine or discern whether or not you have pride and what humility looks like. Now, don't fill out the one on pride for your spouse. Fill it out for yourself. Unless you want to get a really accurate view of yourself, your spouse may be able to help you with that. But I think we did this a long time ago. I think it was the one from, there's another list, an exemplary husband. There's also one by Stuart Scott. And some of you went through the resource called From Pride to Humility. I think we've got that, right? And it's got a similar list in there. But I think it does ask you to have your spouse comment on that. Is that right? I'm pretty sure I remember that. So I think Ray and I have done that before. And that's very helpful, too, because you may think you have a good idea, but sometimes it's good to have your spouse check that with you. So I encourage you to do that, to actually do the homework. It's a good exercise. I think it will be revealing. It's like holding the mirror up, you know, so you can see yourself. So I think that's a good thing to do. Don't fear it, right? Tried to say before, every time the Lord shows us sin or a trespass or some area that we're enslaved in our life, it's a good thing. It may not seem like it, but it is a good thing. So I encourage you guys to do that at some point. But I have some questions here in the time we have left. Do you think you're more godly, righteous, and sanctified than your spouse? Anybody care to comment on that, or is this just going to be one for personal meditation?
I think at least at some point you think that. Even if it's not all the time that you think that, there's always times at some point you think that. I think that'd probably be true for most people.
Yeah. I think that can occur when you think your spouse has sinned against you, mm-hmm. or they actually have.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty easy to think, well, I wouldn't do that. I'm better than them or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, I think you're right, Joe. I think that's probably somebody in here may be different from that, but I think probably everybody would have to admit to that. At times I've thought that, and man, that's ugly.
Yeah.
That's a really works-based, self-righteous, ugly approach. But
I'd also say, at least in my experience, God has done a pretty good job of correcting that behavior when he exposes you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's usually not too soon after you have that thought.
Yeah.
Putting your foot in your mouth, or you ride your bicycle in a tree, or whatever. Something really dumb.
I think it also can come just in all relationships, not just marriage, when the Lord has taught you and humbled you in a certain situation, and then you see somebody else struggling with that same thing you struggle with, and you forget the Lord had to humble you in it. You think, well, I've learned this. Why haven't you learned this? So there can be a self-righteousness there when you've been sanctified and the other person hasn't in that area.
Yeah.
So then you'd be sanctified all over again.
But I think the amnesia is remembering that the Lord did that work in
right.
you, not instead of thinking, I overcame that.
Yeah. I am what I am by the grace of God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, when you're trying to point out or help you with your spouse, there's in stating it, you could take it as a rejection. I'm thinking of a definition of self-pity is receiving instruction and taking it as rejection. So you don't see it as trying to help me, you're trying to point out my faults. Rather than saying that my spouse is there to help me, and so this is a help, not a... So there's a mind change that has to take place there in order for this to work. And that's got to be based in love and not in... That doesn't go anywhere. But to try to communicate that in a loving way and express that it's to help the other person, I think goes a long way. And like Emily was saying, the self-pity is another one of those prideful things that mm-hmm. that you, and I don't know whether that's from training from society that makes it. You know, if somebody says something negative, you want to take it immediately as an arrow against you, and you don't see that as somebody trying to help you. It's somebody trying to put you down.
It's always a good indication of pride when you're defensive. Mm-hmm. I've said this before, even if somebody brings some correction to you that maybe isn't in the right tone or doesn't seem to be for the right motive, get over it. Mm-hmm. If it's true, accept it. You know, quit pointing back to them and say, hey, that's unloving, or you aren't. I mean, it's nice if it's done in the spirit. It's easier to accept it, but yeah. And I think you just point out a really great point. Look at your spouse as somebody who's loving you and trying to help you, not as somebody who's trying to knock you down and be critical of you. Who's the hardest person in your life to take correction from? Is it your spouse? First thing we do when our spouse wants to point out something to us, we want to point something out about them, right? So, avoid rebuking the rebuker, okay? At least in the moment. right? So avoid rebuking the rebuker. When you're being reproved or corrected, take it, think about it, pray about it. Respond, too. I think this is one of the things that we don't do enough of, because it's really hard to correct someone. But if you correct someone, and the one that's being corrected, it's good to come back at some point and say, oh, thank you for that. And that was really good. I could see myself here. That encourages that relationship. Somebody was going to make a comment here a little bit ago, and maybe the time's passed her. Okay. Any other thoughts on that? So next question kind of goes along with it. What happens in a relationship if one spouse thinks and communicates that they are more godly, spiritual, and righteous than their spouse? What's going to begin to happen in that relationship?
Well, one is that they won't be growing because they don't see any need for growth.
Yep.
And on the same thing as that, they're going to harden. They can be hardened in their sin because they will refuse to see it, right? And they become like unteachable, uncorrectable, because they've, in a sense, in their mind, arrived at something that the other one has, and that the other one doesn't have a right to say anything because they're not on the same plane.
I should be leading more because I'm superior.
Mm-hmm.
Should do what I think one thing that you lose in a situation like that is respect. And this might be easy for, I'm going to use a wife here as an example. She commanded to respect her husband, right, from Ephesians 5. She may lose respect if she believes that her husband is less godly or spiritual, knowledgeable than herself. Could start to lose respect. And like I said earlier, it could be that maybe she is more sanctified, maybe a lap or two ahead, so to speak. But that's all by the grace of God, and even then it doesn't mean that you still shouldn't follow the commands of the Lord. That can happen both ways, husbands on wives too. But for some reason I think God has made women to be more spiritually sensitive in a lot of ways, and so sometimes men do kind of lag behind a little bit. So I think that could be a danger. Anybody else comments on that? So I think this happens. Self-righteous attitudes that permeate marriages. One spouse thinking they're better. Both spouses thinking they're better than the other.
I think when one thinks they're better than the other spouse might believe that and think they're way less spiritual and less godly. And then that effect is like, well, I'll never measure up, and they almost just get run over.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
so,
point.
I don't know. I've seen that in a couple of cases where the husband's like, well, I just don't measure up, so I'm not going to lead.
I'll let her lead?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Instead of celebrating the spouse, instead of looking down on them, celebrate the areas where they are and encourage the areas where they are growing and demonstrate godly fruit.
There will also be a lack of safety in the relationship of talking about sin and anything outside of sin too. But there's something when you trust the other person and the other person recognizes that they are also a sinful place, you're at the same level, that it makes it easier to go and ask forgiveness or repent or, hey, I'm struggling with this, can you help me? But if there's a self-righteous person in the relationship in this way, that won't happen, or it'll make it really hard to do that.
Yeah. Self-righteousness is an ugly sin. I heard Pastor Dave say it's the worst of the sins. A total dependence on self and exaltation of self and a a lack of dependence on Christ and his grace and his forgiveness. So I think it's a dangerous place to be, remembering always, I am who I am by the grace of God. That's so important. Another question, maybe these are a little bit too similar, but how do you see pride and self-righteousness undermining a marriage and spoiling the vineyard?
I think there would be a whole channel of communication that would be shut down with that. If you have somebody who thinks that they're more spiritually mature, more sanctified on a higher level, then they're maybe not going to want to interact with the other spouse in that regard, and vice versa. Like, I think no matter how that other spouse feels, if they agree or not, mm-hmm. I think you're just going to have a whole, like, line of communication that is just not going to be able to occur. And then there's a whole lot less talking. And
I think with the pride and self-righteousness, too, in one of those spouses, it shows a lack of respect for the spouse that they're undermining all the time. I mean, they don't show any respect or honor to that person.
Yeah.
It's very
pleading
to a good relationship.
Yeah.
I think in terms of marriage, if we're one flesh, what benefits me benefits my spouse. You know, the proverb about the woman tearing her house down with her own hands. When we're tearing them down or keeping them down or have like a boot on their neck or something like that, mm-hmm. you know that it actually is not, it's harmful to them, it's harmful to you too. Spiritually,
yeah.
To everyone.
Heather, quoting Proverbs 14:1, wise woman builds her house up, but a foolish one tears it down with her hands. I think it says mm-hmm. actually.
Pride keeps us from confessing our sins, you know, before a Holy Father. Mm-hmm. When you come to the Holy Father, you don't want to confess your sins as you admit it, but you've got a forgiving Father that will forgive you. So when you come to your spouse to confess a sin, you're worried about, you know, you're going to get the same grace that the Father gives me.
Yeah.
You know, so it keeps us, our pride won't let us confess that sin. And when you get to, you know, that way.
You want a safe place, equal footing, foot of the cross.
Yeah.
Saint and sinner. I'm a saint, but I sin. So does my spouse. Grace, same thing, like Mark said, as we get from our Father. What is God's disposition towards a proud and self-righteous person?
With that is that God has a way of humbling you.
Yeah.
I remember one time I felt really prideful about my appearance, and I was going, I drove quite a ways to a meeting, and I was wearing a really light tan jumpsuit. And I get out, and when I go into this, it was a golf course clubhouse, you know, and I did not realize that when I sat down in the car, there was an open tube of lipstick that I sat on. So the rest of the day I was backing up, you know, and I realized right away, as soon as someone brought it to my attention and I tried to clean it off and it just smeared it everywhere, I realized that God loved me so much.
Thank you for humbly sharing that.
We had a neighbor behind us that was removing trees, and I was really upset. I was out there, and he's like, "Lady, these are my trees." You know, I didn't want to lose the shade on our yard. Well, a couple of days later, we had this big windstorm, and it just uprooted a big tree right at the fence. And my mom's like, "That's what you get for coveting your neighbor's trees."
You guys want to roll anymore? I think what you're saying is God will humble you. That's his disposition towards pride and proud and self-righteous people. He opposes you. But he gives grace to the humble.
And we may not view it as such, but that is something we should rejoice in, that God won't help us in our sin. He's not going to help us sin. He's going to put blockades in the way. He's going to, you know, he's going to try to, you know, through his, not try, he will humble us by taking that idol
mm-hmm.
off of the throne.
Yeah.
And it's a testimony of us being his children, too.
Proverbs says, I hate pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. God hates pride and arrogance, evil behavior, and perverse speech. What would happen to your marriage if it was daily freshened by humility? Let's get a vision here for what marriage could be. If it's daily cultivated with humility. Speaking of a garden, what if you fed humility to your marriage garden every day? Isn't that what we all want?
Peaceful.
That's one of the words I had down. Yeah. Harmony. Make me think of pride causing strife. It's pride causes disharmony in your family. I hate disharmony. I mean, who in here doesn't like peace and harmony? If you do, if you like something that's not harmony, if you like strife, look out. But yeah, and we avoid conflict, right? So we really do want harmony and peace and joyful. What are some other visions you would have for?
There'd also be a hunger for the word and a joyful going to the word together.
Mm-hmm.
Be more intimate.
Yeah.
If you're humble yourself or your spouse, and then that's received well, and you don't feel like your spouse is going to hang that over you, you're just going to go closer and closer together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the path to intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Whole intimacy.
There's a renewal of unity every day. Like that union that you
mm-hmm.
have, it's like completely restored every day then.
Yeah.
And it's not that we don't, I use an analogy a lot of a rock tumbler, like a Christian, like the church, marriage, family life, it's all like being in a rock tumbler. You know, that knocking up against one another is what polishes us, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a sanctifying thing. So to not be afraid either of conflict, but to do it in a way that's helpful
yeah.
and loving, right?
Yeah, love is not proud, so.
Mm-hmm.
It provides an atmosphere of like security, stability, because you know if both spouses are humble, that whatever's happening, whatever she's saying to me, is for my good. She's not doing this for her own purposes and make herself, you know, whatever. So like, and vice versa. If the husband is loving his wife, anything he says or does in conversations or difficult decisions that have to be made are not for that person's own good at the detriment of the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, there's some security
yeah.
in that.
And building off of that, sure does make submitting a whole lot easier. You know, when you have that mindset of, oh, I may not understand why my husband made this decision, but I trust that he included my input. I trust he's thinking of the health of the family and the health of the church. And so, okay.
Yeah. So trust,
yeah.
Humility helps in building trust. In one another, for sure.
And then you can do it joyfully.
thought I would put this in here. We're just getting down towards the end of time, but from What Did You Expect, or Paul Tripp's marriage, it's called Marriage Now. He has six commitments that he includes in that, and I thought these were rich and good. Commitment number one, we will give ourselves to a regular lifestyle of confession and forgiveness. We'll make growth and change our daily agenda. We will work together to build a sturdy bond of trust. We will commit to building a relationship of love. We will deal with our differences with appreciation and grace. That's a big one. So many people enter marriage like, I'm going to make this person into who I think they should be. They're going to make them into somebody like me. They need to be like me. No. You need to know that your spouse has gifts and abilities uniquely for your marriage to complement each other. One may be more loud than the other. Lots of different differences come along, but you're going to deal with your differences with appreciation and grace. We will work to protect our marriage. And we'll be getting into that one a lot later on, particularly in the area of sexual immorality and finances, how those two things can really open up a marriage to lots of danger. So again, encourage you, if you have time, make time this week to go through the handout and just pick out, like on the one on pride, just pick out three or four that might kind of characterize you individually. If all 50 sound like there's 50 some, somebody want, I think that's right.
59.
59. You check all 59 boxes. your spouse is the same. No Sunday school the next 2 weeks. So whenever that first Sunday in January is, we'll be picking back up. And I picked about four or five different boxes and weeks to go through, and also want to cover, just go through each of the imperatives for the husband, each of the imperatives for the wife at some point, and then the marriage class will be complete, maybe another 4 or 5 weeks or something like that. And three or four, perhaps. So, any comments, questions, last minute or two? Okay, always appreciate you guys' input. We'll see you in the service.